But for the sake of our sermon today, and I just maybe say at this point that today I want to start one of a series of 10 sermons with you. It's taken from a book written some years ago now by, he certainly used to be fairly local, a songwriter who used to worship at a church in Watford, Matt Redman. Maybe one or two people know some of his songs. I'll actually give reference to one of them right at the end of the sermon. But he's written a book, and it's probably more for worship leaders. I certainly encourage worship leaders to read this book if you're involved in music and so on. But in reading the book, it's only a little book, I thought, wow, here's 10 chapters that at least the title and some of the content, I can work with some of these ideas. So I do want to give that as an admission, but it's not someone else's sermon, but start of someone else's idea. So this week we have the sermon title of The Unquenchable Worshipper. And just in case people are feeling a little bit too warm, just before I read the scripture reading, I'll tell you a little bit of what it's about in case you happen to drift off. You will be able to listen to it on the podcast later if you do. But the unquenchable worshipper is the worshipper that says, no matter what happens in my life, whatever circumstances I find myself in, I will still worship God. Doesn't matter. Anything can happen, but I will still worship God. Let's see what Habakkuk says. In Habakkuk chapter 3, right at the end, verses 17 and 18, as I have it translated, it reads like this. Though the fig tree does not bud, and there are no grapes on the vines, though the olive crops fail and the fields produce no food, though there are no sheep in the pen and no cattle in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will be joyful in God my Saviour. So a warm room. And I've already given you the punchline and a slow, melodious song before the sermon. Yeah, I've already painted my own outcome here. So I will try and keep you with me as I share with you some thoughts about what I have concluded, I believe, to be the essence of what an unquenchable worshipper is and has. But first, a story. Not too far away from here, I got invited to go and visit a lady. She is 87 years old. She doesn't go to this church. It was another Adventist who works in this area had, in a roundabout way, made contact and so on, and asked for someone to go and see this lady. And I went to see her, and she's there, laid out in her bed in her home, with these carers that come and see to her needs. She told me that one of her two daughters had died. She told me that she was going blind and she was going deaf. She told me that when she had got married and her husband had died a number of years ago, that she had decided that she would change her faith, her denomination at least, and so she would be in tune with his. And she told me that now she was in a lot of pain and a lot of grief because of especially her daughter and her daughter's death. And she said to me, "Is God finished with me? Is God finished with me?" I tried to give her some words of encouragement and reassurance that God isn't finished with anyone. There is nothing that we can do or that we go through that means that God says, "I've given up on this person." And I said to her that one of the most wonderful things for me to listen to her story, and sad and full of pain and grief that it is, I said, the good bit is you're still asking the question and you're still inquiring of God, although you feel as though, where is God? I don't get the sense of God's presence here. I said, that's the best bit. That you still are clinging on to that inquiry of God. It reminded me of a story that my dad had told of one time when he was ill. And just over a week ago was the 10th anniversary of my dad's death. But he had written a couple of books, three books or so, but one of them was about his experience of his dealing with cancer and chemotherapy and a little bit about his childhood life and so on. And he tells a story of being in hospital one time, I think this is maybe 80s, early 90s, and he was there for chemotherapy and going through treatment. And he was in, I think, a little ward of maybe four or six beds. And it was late at night, and of course everyone that's in there is seriously ill. And in the middle of the night, this guy over the other corner of the room kept muttering out these words of that sounded like scripture or little prayers that he must have learnt as a child and so on. But he was just going on and on and on through the night. And it just got to a point where with my dad, he'd had enough. Although my dad was a pastor as well, it was just like... And he just said, he said something rather, I can't remember the exact words, but it was along the lines of, "Will you please be quiet? Some of us are trying to sleep." Sorry, I know some of you were as well. And he just had this outburst of, "Just shut up! Be quiet!" And then almost immediately, he felt really bad. And he sat there, laid there in the silence, and then decided, look, he's clearly going through this sort of spiritual wrestle with God of his situation, and realizing that, you know, I'm a pastor, and if they know or remember, then, you know, they'll maybe wonder why I've had this outburst. So he got out of bed and went over and spoke to him. And during that conversation, the man had disclosed of his fear of dying and his lack of certainty as to what will happen next. And he was grappling with God about his faith. And I'd say the same thing about that man who just a few days later died. Both the lady that I visited and that man in my dad's ward were at least grappling and willing to inquire of God. Although they didn't feel or sense God's presence, there was still that inquiry, there was still that questioning. The unquenchable worshipper, even in the face of doubt, still comes to the point saying, "Okay, God, I've got this question. Are you really there? Is there anybody out there?" I should have checked with the picking of the hymns today and so on. I did Have we sung a Fanny Crosby song? No. And the last one isn't either. That was shame on me. I should have made sure Fanny Crosby, she has written a number of hymns that have found their way into our hymn book. But Fanny Crosby was blind around some years ago, but she was blind, and she was blinded when she was very young. She had some problem with her eyes, and a medical procedure, a bit of an attempt, didn't work out. It all went wrong, and she was permanently blinded. And she was asked later on in life, "Look, you're a very cheery personality, and so on. Do you not feel bad that you can't see anymore?" And you know what her response was? She said, "It's okay. Because when I get my sight back, the first person that I will see will be Jesus." Wow. Don't know if we've got any songwriters in the congregation today, but have a guess how many Fanny Crosby wrote, how many hymns she wrote. Anyone hazard a guess? 900? That would be a lot, wouldn't it? 900. I mean, if you took one a week, I mean, that's what? 900? Who's good at maths? 900 divided by 50? So 18 years? That's a long time if she was writing one a week. Over 8,000 hymns is apparently she wrote. But she was blind. And included in that list of hymns or poems, she wrote these words: "Oh, what a happy soul am I, although I cannot see. I am resolved that in this world contented I will be. How many blessings I enjoy that other people don't. To weep and sigh because I'm blind, I cannot and I won't." 8 years old she was when she wrote those words. The unquenchable worshipper says to themselves, no matter what situation I am in, no matter what life is imposing itself on me, there is one thing for sure. I will always, always give my worship and inquiry to God. Now, I'm going to get my kids to be quiet at this point, because I have a question for you. It's something that I have, in their childhood, drilled into them, partly because I enjoy the outdoors and camping and fires and so on. But they're starting to smile. They have learnt that there are three things that you need in order to have fire. Okay, anyone help me then? Anyone want to hazard a guess? What three things? Any one of those three things? What do you think? Making fire, but it's three elements that you need, three things that you need in order for fire to exist. Sticks, okay, and sticks are fuel, aren't they? So sticks, you need sticks and wood, things that are going to burn. So we need fuel. What else? Oxygen, we need air. Okay, there's two. And what's the third thing? Spark carries the heat. I heard heat over here somewhere. Okay, so we need heat, we need oxygen, and we need fuel in order to have fire. You take any one of those away, and what happens to fire? It goes out. So today, with a mind about being an unquenchable worshipper, I'm going to suggest to you three things that we need in order to be an unquenchable worshiper, to have that fire of faith in us. The first one I'm going to equate to with heat. If we quench heat, then our fire goes out. Heat, I'm suggesting, is equivalent to our attitude. When we let our circumstances cool us down, we've maybe got the wrong attitude. Have you ever heard other people? Maybe I'll make it more personal. Have you ever felt yourself that just this whole faith thing is a bit difficult because you don't feel that God is there? You don't feel that there's other emotions. There's the love that you need. You don't feel that things are right. Maybe I should leave that as a more of a rhetorical question. But I think that there is a problem when we confuse feelings with attitude. Because feelings can be influenced by our circumstances. But our attitude determines the way that our circumstances are going to work out. So feelings are nice and warm and comfy, but when they're not the right feelings, they can affect our faith. But instead of concentrating on our feelings, we need to think about our attitude. And if we let our attitude be extinguished, to be quenched, then we start losing our faith. Heat, attitude. It's that determination that no matter what happens in my life, I'm always going to worship God. It's having that mindset right from the start, even before problems happen. I have an admission to make, kind of related to fire. I did some years ago. I went through a spell of a habit of smoking, and I was invited to join a group of people that were collectively were going to go through a few programs, and so I'll meet for a week or so, and we were going to stop smoking. And just to not harbour on that point too much, there were two things that we learnt, two little phrases that we learnt that I have found invaluable in lots of other ways in life. Not just for smokers, these ones, okay? But this phrase that we learn in this case was, I choose not to smoke. I choose not to smoke. We can apply that in lots of different ways in our lives. Take out that smoke bit. I choose to be happy. It's a determination. It's what you're telling yourself and your brain. This is the way I'm going to be. This is my attitude towards the situation, even if it's a bad situation. I choose not to smoke. And then the other little phrase was, to fail is only to fail if we fail to try again. Because sometimes our attitude fails on us. We let the circumstance get us down, and we trip ourselves up. But to fail is only to fail if we fail to try again. So quench number one, what is it that we need to watch in order to have this heat of faith, this fire of faith? It's our attitude. We need to make sure we don't quench our attitude. Quench number two, someone said about air and oxygen and so on. Well, oxygen, fine, is slightly more than just oxygen, but we'll stick with oxygen. It's what do we need oxygen for? Our breath. We're all breathing. We're all contributing to the heat in here. So if you could stop breathing, just for another 10 minutes, that would do. But our breath, quench number two, is like oxygen for a fire, is like our breath in our faith. Every breath that we take, sounds like a line of a song, doesn't it? Every breath that we take, what do? When we breathe in, can we all do this? What happens next? We breathe out. And what happens next? We breathe in. And what happens next? Yeah, it's not rocket science, is it? It's just what we naturally do. But with every exhale, where every breath comes from God, every exhale comes from us. Every exhale that we give is an opportunity of praise to God through the things that we say or sing, or the activities that we get involved in where we need more oxygen. When we stop exhaling our appreciation and our thanks and our recognition of God, that's quench number two. So what do we need to watch? Quench number one is what? Our attitude. Quench number two is our breath, our exhale, our exaltation. When we stop giving God the right attitude and the right kind of words from our mouths, we start to extinguish our faith. Quench number three. What was number three? On a fire. What was the third element? Who said sticks? You said sticks. Fuel. Yeah, sticks are fuel. A fire needs fuel. And what does faith need? It's a leading question. Hopefully not too difficult. What do we need for faith? Faith needs... Okay, we've got some people still awake. We'll do aerobics in a minute just to get this number two going. Faith needs fuel. Where do we get our fuel from for our faith? Through reading, through praying, through listening, through those words of encouragement that other people give to us. The moment that we stop reading, the moment that we stop listening, the moment that we start cutting out people's opportunity of sharing their faith with us, we start to quench the fire of faith. An unquenchable worshipper is the worshipper that says, no matter what happens in my life, no matter what, I will not let any of these things be quenched in my faith relationship with God. It was the attitude of Jesus. Even there on a cross, Jesus came to this earth. This is God incarnate, God as a human being. There, accepting the ridicule and the persecution of mankind, and about to face the death that each of us deserve, and that is that spiritual death of separation from God the Father. That was his anguish in the garden. And Jesus asked of God the Father, look, if this could be taken away from me. Jesus wasn't worried about his physical death. He knew that all things would be made new. But he just couldn't face that anticipation of being separated from God the Father. That's the death that we deserve, that total separation from God. And it was there on the cross that Jesus said a few words, my God, my God. Anyone read that? Jesus said, my God, why have you forsaken me? Do you know where Jesus got those words from? It's a psalm. Psalm 22. That's how the psalm starts off. 70% of psalms are actually psalms of lament, of inquiring of God, just like that Psalm 22. My God, why have you forsaken me? Why would Jesus say that? Because he knew that he was just about to experience that total separation from God the Father, that presence of God. That's the pain and that's the agony that Jesus was going through. And that's what he went through for you and me. Into your hands I commit my spirit is another line, roughly speaking, of what Jesus said just before he hung his head and breathed his last. It's another psalm. Psalm 31, verse 5. People stood around, would have heard these words, probably would have recognized, oh, that's from that hymn, that's from that song. Wow, he's crying out to God. Even in his pain and his agony, he's inquiring of God. Jesus didn't give up on God, even in that kind of situation. The unquenchable worshipper is the worshipper that says, no matter what life throws at me, no matter what life gives me that I have to deal with, although I can't see the light at the end of the tunnel, I will still worship God. Mayuran Sukumaran, not very good at Far Eastern names, and Andrew Chan, I can manage that one, were deemed as two of the ringleaders of the Bali Nine. Those people that are a little bit older might remember the Bali Nine. Bali, not the crop, you know, the barley as in the country. And they were caught by the officials in Bali, and it was found that they had a lot of heroin in their possession. And with the inquiries and the evidence and so on that had been collected, it was found that these guys were part of a drugs ring, and they were transporting all of these drugs back to Australia. They were caught, they were accused, they were put in prison for being drug smugglers. And in Bali, the outcome of the court was that they were all to lose their lives. They were all to stand before the firing line and be shot dead. Of course, what goes on afterwards after a trial is retrials and appeals and so on, and they tried to appeal for clemency and so on, that they wouldn't be killed for this, that they would just stay in prison or something. And year went into year, but throughout this time, though they started off guys that, actually when you read their stories and their background, that these were quite well-educated guys, but somehow just were looking for something else. Maybe it was the thrill and the dare of the smuggle and not getting caught, as well as the money. But they did get caught, and they found themselves in prison. And while they were in prison, they found a faith relationship with Jesus. So much so that they then started Christian groups in prison, and they started sharing their faith. Were they in a good circumstance and situation? No. They'd been caught and they were facing being shot for their wrong deeds. But as they found their faith relationship in Jesus, they realized that it doesn't matter what the situation is. I can worship God. Time went on, they set up these faith groups and so on. And despite all the appeals and the attempts by different governments and so on, it got to the day where this is when it will happen. And I am told that as they were put into vehicles and taken out to the field that they were going to be shot, they started singing. And as they got out of the vehicle and they were starting to go up to the points where they would be shot, they started singing, "Amazing Grace,
How sweet the sound.
And as they were singing, this group started to wane in their singing and their enthusiasm. And I read that Andrew Chan especially just said, "Come on, guys, we can sing better than this." I mean, you couldn't blame them, could you? They were about to be shot, killed for their wrong deeds years ago. No matter what the situation, the unquenchable worshipper says, "I will still worship God." As they walked across the field, they finished singing Amazing Grace. And then they started singing another song. The song is a more recent song that has been written by Matt Redman. Maybe some of you know the song. It's called 10,000 Reasons. Not long ago, Matt Redman tried to get 10,000 people, I think it was, in Times Square in New York, and performed the song and tried to get everyone singing it there. I am told that they managed one verse of this song, and then their lives were ended. The unquenchable worshipper says, no matter what the situation, I will still worship God. As they stood in the field and faced their executors, the men sang, "The sun comes up, it's a new day dawning. It's time to sing your song again. Whatever may pass and whatever lies before me, let me be singing when the evening comes. Bless the Lord, O my soul, O my soul. Worship his holy name. Sing like never before, O my soul. I'll worship your holy name." The unquenchable worshipper says, doesn't matter what's going to happen, I'm still going to worship God.